Rise and shine, it's Saturday morning!
It's time for Saturday morning. It's time for Saturday morning. It's time for Saturday morning. It'll always be Saturday morning. Right.
That's right. Grab your cereal and your favorite spot on the living room floor. Because for the next 10 minutes, here's what's on our TV.
And now for the adventures of Ruffian Bullwinkle and friends. Starring the jetty Jerry O'Lace, Rocket J. Squirrel, and his pal, Bullwinkle the Moose.
Hi, glad to see you again.
Likewise.
We got some great things on the show today.
Like what? Like what?
Well, you ought to know, Bullwinkle. You're in some of them.
Well, let's get started.
Ah, yes. Today's show is all about yet another really key cartoon show in the history of Saturday morning, and really responsible for helping to kick that off in a lot of ways. I am talking about Rocky and Bullwinkle. I am your friend Claude, and much like the aforementioned Rocket J. Squirrel, I'm going to be flying solo today. So let's get right into some of the details behind the creation of Rocky and Bullwinkle. It came about in the late 50s, really from the ashes of an existing cartoon called Crusader Rabbit, which is credited as the first animated series made specifically for television. That was a show created by a pair of childhood friends named Alex Anderson and Jay Ward. Anderson had worked for Terry Toons Studios, which, among other things, gave us the legendary Mighty Mouse cartoons. So he was more of the creative half of the duo, and Jay Ward was more of the business end. And despite being really crudely animated, Crusader Rabbit was kind of the testing ground for a lot of the humor style that would become prevalent later on in Rocky and Bullwinkle. So between the unique humor and the novelty of a televised cartoon show, Crusader Rabbit was actually pretty successful, and it ran for most of the 50s. But the relationship between Ward and Anderson sort of soured and became litigious. There was rights issues involved. And out of the ashes of that, Jay Ward went on to take everything that kind of worked in the Crusader Rabbit period and apply it to a new show, still not called Rocky and Bullwinkle, called The Frostbite Falls Review. It was originally a cast of several animals, including Bullwinkle, then known as the Canadian Moose, Rocket J. Squirrel, who still kept his name, Oski Bear, Sylvester Fox, Blackstone Crow, and Floral Fauna. Unfortunately, the network passed on the concept, and it didn't get any farther in development. So, in an effort to reattract some interest, all but two of the animals were dropped, and a partnership with General Mills was struck, with the sole intent to kind of focus on advertising directly to children. And the network found that much more attractive. So they were off to the races. General Mills Cereal Company was headquartered in Minnesota, and that just happened to be the location of Frostbite Falls, the fictional town where Rocky and Bullwinkle lived as well. So even though it took place in Minnesota, it was produced in California and actually animated in Mexico. In an effort to save some money, Jay Ward convinced General Mills to purchase an existing small animation studio in Mexico rather than try to farm it out to a third party. And doing this was cost effective, but it did present a bunch of additional problems, as especially during the early stages of production, the animation was very inconsistent. A lot of errors, a lot of inaccurate colors, and a lot of changing costume designs and things like that could be seen. But once they were able to get those under control a little better, the network liked what they saw, and the show premiered on ABC November 19th of 1959. And it kind of immediately had success. It was the highest rated daytime show of 1959. They were able to take the comedy seeds planted in Crusader Rabbit and really enhance and focus on that style here in Rocky and Bullwinkle. And it was really the first well-known cartoon to work on two levels, like most really good and successful shows do, where there was surface appeal for the children, and a lot of the jokes and gags and puns were something that adults could really find entertainment value in. And because this was during the peak of the Cold War years, there were plenty of not-so-subtle political references in the mix as well. So between the comedy style and the variety show format they used, Rocking Bullwinkle really influenced everything that came after it, from things like Garfield and Friends and Animaniacs to Ren and Stimpy and Rocko's Modern Life. Pretty much every show that uses subversive and self-referential humor is in its debt. In fact, Matt Groening, creator of The Simpsons, gave Bart, Homer, and Abe Simpson all the middle initial J, in direct reference to the fact that both Rocky and Bullwinkle's middle initials are also J. And it wasn't just the adventures of the moose and the squirrel and their battle against the not-quite-Russian spies, Boris and Natasha, that kept audiences coming back. The show itself gave the world several other shorts that became pop culture phenomena in their own right, including Dudley Do-Right, Sherman and Mr. Peabody, Fractured Fairy Tales, and Mr. Know-It-All, among others. I think anybody who watched Ren and Stimpy in the 90s immediately recognized the parallels between their Ask Dr. Stupid segment and Bullwinkle's Mr. Know-It-All. The Sherman and Mr. Peabody segments introduced the term Wayback Machine into the pop culture lexicon, which has since become shorthand for basically doing any kind of research into history. And I'm willing to bet they never considered that a cartoon short about a genius dog and his pet boy would have that kind of legacy.
Hello there, Peabody here. Once again, it is time to take another revealing peek back into history.
What famous date shall I set it to today, Mr. Peabody?
October 19th, 1781.
Got it. And the place?
Yorktown, Virginia, where we shall witness that great moment of the American Revolution when Cornwallis surrendered to General Washington.
And away we go!
For the modern incarnation of that dynamic, look no further than the relationship between Stewie Griffin and Brian the dog on Family Guy. Mr. Peabody is also the name of the farmer in Back to the Future whose barn Marty crashes the DeLorean time machine into the first time he goes back to 1955. In a fitting connection to Jay Ward's partnership with a cereal company, they also were responsible for giving the world Captain Crunch.
Today we're going to witness a live demonstration of the fact that Captain Crunch cereal stays sweet and crunchy even in milk. We're going to tie Captain Crunch to the rudder of the good ship Guppy. For this dramatic demonstration, we have drained Lake Michigan and filled it with fresh milk. Captain Crunch, do you have anything you'd like to say to our home audience?
As a matter of fact, yes.
And what is that?
Help!
Well, time's up. Let's see how our Captain Crunch cereal has done.
Yay!
There you are, ladies and gentlemen. Dramatic proof that Captain Crunch cereal stays sweet and crunchy even in milk. And how did you come through it, Captain?
Oh, I'm fine, I guess. I'm going to have to get a milk-proof watch.
Jay Ward Productions produced the very first Captain Crunch commercials in their distinctive style, and Dawes Butler, who did several voices on Rocky and Bullwinkle, in addition to being the voice of Yogi Bear and Huckleberry Hound, provided the voice of Captain Crunch from inception all the way to his death in 1988. Which is proof that Saturday morning and breakfast cereal were inseparable from the very beginning. The Rocky and Bullwinkle series went on to inspire several theatrical releases, both live-action and computer-animated, including Dudley Do-Right in 1999, starring Brendan Fraser and Sarah Jessica Parker, The Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle in 2000, which was a mix of live-action and CGI, starring Jason Alexander, Robert De Niro, and Rene Russo, and then in 2014... a Sherman and Mr. Peabody cartoon came out, followed by another one just called Rocky and Bullwinkle from DreamWorks. Universal Studios now holds the rights to the series, and the characters can be seen all over their Islands of Adventure theme park. I personally had experience with that in the form of their Dudley Do-Right log flume ride in the year 2000 when the movie came out, and I wasn't a fan. It's one of those rides that it makes you feel like as you go down the drop, you're going to smash your head on like a beam or something. And I don't find that thrilling. I just find it terrifying. So check it out at your own risk. And I think that's all the time we have today. Thanks for tuning in yet again and kicking off your weekend with 10-Minute Tunes. I've been your friend Claude, and I will see you next Saturday.